is there life on Mars?
Hi, this is Dan, and this is the Earn This Podcast, and I have with us a new guest. How are we doing today, Matt?
Doing well, Dan. How are you?
Matt's one of my good friends, and he's a movie buff, and we were having an interesting discussion the other day. We were texting each other back and forth after we saw The Martian. So we saw The Martian shortly after it came out, and we had some thoughts on it. So would you say you enjoyed The Martian?
Yeah, so I think The Martian was a good movie. You know, Ridley Scott is kind of second to none in terms of the sci-fi genre. But yeah, what did you think of it? Did you like it?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was good entertainment. I mean, Ridley Scott has made some movies that are greater than entertainment. I mean, they kind of, you know, exceed that. And I would say that The Martian, while entertaining, is not going to go down as a great movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was well-crafted popcorn entertainment. I mean, there's a couple of strange things about it. I did think Matt Damon, you needed someone, it's kind of an interesting casting, because you needed someone who would just, like, you could just watch that person by themselves, and they'd have to be entertaining enough, and there's a handful of people who could do that, and Matt Damon is one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think Matt Damon was kind of an obvious choice for this movie, almost, especially coming off of Interstellar last year with Matthew McConaughey. Having played an astronaut, having played a hero astronaut at that, kind of a guy that you would look to as being super charismatic as well, so definitely kind of an obvious choice there. But do you think he actually pulled it off in this one?
See, it's interesting because to answer that question, I think I almost want to talk a little bit about the book and the main character of the book, because we kind of had different experiences going in. I had read the book, the bestseller by Mark Weir, I think the name of the author is.
Andy Weir, I think.
Andy Weir?
Andy Weir.
Oh, because Mark Watney is the character.
Yep, Mark Watney is the character.
So I had read it, and Matt Damon is a little bit more heroic and, like, charming and, I don't know, like a traditional hero. There, with the book, he's kind of like a nerdy guy, and he's a little bit more, I don't know, he's, like, kind of less... I pictured him as less charismatic and less, I don't know what the right word is here, but do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, like, I remember we were talking before, and we were kind of comparing it to, you know, obviously the name of the podcast is Earn This, so one of your favorite actors, Tom Hanks, in a movie like Apollo 13. And we were just saying before that, you know, in a movie like Apollo 13, where you have these stiff astronaut characters, you need a guy like Tom Hanks in order to kind of bring people in and really get them into a charismatic guy. But in this movie, I mean, this is a complete fictional movie about a guy stuck on Mars. Maybe Matt Damon's a little too charismatic for that kind of role and for the character.
The challenges were kind of interesting enough on their own that you didn't need, like... I'm not sure you necessarily needed a Matt Damon type to convey the story. That said, he was extremely entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
Very, very funny, and you could just get into it when he was doing it.
For sure. And, you know, we mentioned the book. I'm actually halfway through the book right now. Fortunately, saw the movie first, so I kind of have a different experience with the whole thing. I'm super impressed with how detailed the book is. Is that something that you liked about it, or...?
Yeah, so the book manages to pull an interesting trick where it's hard sci-fi, so... In this case, hard sci-fi, I mean, like, very focused on the science itself and, like, the technology, and as opposed to, like, focusing more on the story elements, it's more about, like, the science itself. Not that there isn't a good story about it, but that's actually the trick, I think, is that it manages to be so hard in the sense of focusing on the details and the technical specificity while still being so engaging and fun and funny and keeping a very light, readable tone. I mean, you worry, what's the 2001 tagline in space? No one can hear you scream.
Right, yeah.
Like, I just always imagine, when I hear hard sci-fi, I imagine a tone like that that's, like, very dark and, like, cold and scary. But this is not that. It's, like, goofy and fun, the tone. He's just, like, because it's from this guy's perspective, like, it's not too dark.
Yeah. actually, a couple things to that. First thing is, I didn't even know about hard sci-fi until this book. On the front cover of the book, it says, the best example of pure science fiction, as opposed to pure science fiction.
Right.
Because it is so science-heavy and so accurate. And yeah, I think Andy Weir definitely takes painstaking detail in describing kind of what his character, Mark Watney, is going through. And yeah, it is super entertaining. And I think kind of what we're talking about the goofiness, is it all comes from Watney.
Right.
Like, this guy's written a character that is inherently goofy and interesting and fun, that you don't need a guy who's that interesting in Matt Damon to play him. You could use a whole range of characters for that.
Another interesting thing about the book and kind of its plot structure, and this is something I kind of noted to you. So if you actually read about the book, it was actually originally published in an online blog format where he would post, I don't know how much he would post at a time, but he would post a little bit at a time. So, thus, it's a very episodic style where he has one challenge in front of them. He conquers that challenge. Then there's another challenge in front of him. He conquers that. Now, obviously, it is tied together by the overall story of Mark Watney trying to have to survive Mars and get off Mars. But the plot itself kind of is just in the series of episodes, these little things he has to figure out one at a time. And so, although in some ways the book was very cinematic in that, like, it was just, it's just a great adventure, and you kind of, when I read the book, I was like, oh, I could definitely see this being a great movie scene. I'm not sure how much the plot in total is a cinematic plot, because generally movies are one arc as opposed to a bunch of mini conflicts, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think that's a true testament to Andy Weir and his style. I mean, first and foremost, the guy's just such a space nerd, and you can tell it's self-proclaimed, and you can definitely tell in the book, because he's so, everything is so detailed, and because he did it in that blog format, I think that also helped him to take each piece, make it scientifically perfect, make it compelling, and then kind of move on to the next. And then also, you know, you mentioned the plot and kind of it as a movie. I think one thing that translates really well into a movie from the book is that Andy Weir writes in a real show, don't tell type of style. He's not really, like, telling us, okay, then Mark was thinking of doing this or that or whatever. It's all action. He does this thing, does that. It progresses quite nicely, I think, that way. And then in terms of the plot, and kind of, say, even the characters, what did you think about the characterization in the movie or in the book in terms of, like, who these people are who are working with them to bring them back?
I think it worked. This is another thing that I thought was kind of cinematic about the book, is that the characters are just deep enough that they have, like, a few traits, and a couple of them go through some growth. But as with blockbuster-type movies, you're not, like, praising all of the character development of the side characters and, like, the depth and complexity of emotion. It's really, like, kind of basic archetypes of characters. A little bit of growth and development here and there, but I would say, I'm not saying it's a weak point, but it's certainly not a focus point of the story, is, like, really digging deep into these characters and their emotions and, like, you know, what are their... I mean, you know enough about their incentives, but, like, in terms of just really digging deep into them, I felt like that just not a focus of the book. And in some ways, I think the movie tried to, like, shoehorn in every single side character to the point that it was probably, like, three too many.
Yeah.
They could have, like, merged a couple of them or cut a couple of them. The book, just by nature of there being more of it and can get in more detail, did a better job of having the right amount of side characters. Yeah.
Like, even the Donald Glover character in the movie. You know, he's great. I mean, I love Donald Glover. He's a great comedian. He's actually a great rapper as well. But he's barely in the movie. We barely even get to see him. He kind of gives the idea for, you know, how they're going to pick him up, and then he's gone. He's never seen from again. And in my opinion, it's almost like a waste of a good actor in your movie, trying to shoehorn that character. One of the other characters could have easily filled the role that he did. And then also, I mean, you mentioned kind of the conflict and the side characters growing and things of that nature. I thought characters like the head of NASA, for a blockbuster movie, or, I mean, even any kind of Hollywood movie, kind of an underutilized guy, you know, they kind of talk about how stiff he is in the movie. He's fairly stiff in the book. But in a movie, it's almost like you need him to be antagonistic, either through red tape to try to bring him home or what have you. But instead, he's just kind of this, he's a staunch personality, but he's not, you know, mean or anything like that in any real way. I thought that kind of left me wanting a little bit from the movie, for sure.
It's true that there's no villainous force other than the Red Planet itself.
Yeah, right, you're stuck on Mars, like, that's the problem, that's the antagonist.
That's actually an interesting point, because I had never really thought about it. There are no villain characters, but they could have made, because there's all those people, there's, I don't even remember their names now, but there's all the people back in NASA who are working together to try and get them there, but there's no one who's, like, trying to stop them.
And right.
That might have been a... I wonder if that would have been better, or if the movie was actually better served by just kind of laser focusing in on the one challenge, the one conflict.
Right, and what's cool about it is that it almost gives a certain realism to the whole thing, because I heard that Andy Weir focused primarily on wanting it to happen all with today's technology. You know, he didn't want this to look like the future. He wanted it to just look like a really well-done present tense. So in that way, I mean, if there was an astronaut stuck on Mars, I don't think there would really be too many antagonistic forces back on Earth trying to stop him from coming back and getting him back safely. But having said that, we're watching a fictional movie, so I think there definitely is room for interpretation.
It could have been a little bit more tense if they had a more antagonistic force back home.
Yeah.
Because now it's just, oh, is his tire going to pop when he's driving around? is something going to break here or there?
And that's something that plays well in the book. In the book, it's cool to just have them focused on him and do the best that they can. But in a movie where you really can't, again, going back to show, don't tell, in a movie you can't tell anything, really, without it being super boring. They just kind of translated that almost directly, and I think the way that both of us kind of agreed, it came off a little bit less ambitious than maybe it could have come off because of points like that.
Yeah, I mean, kind of reiterating what I said at the beginning, it's fine as a piece of entertainment. I mean, the cast is, we didn't really talk much about the cast, but the cast, other than Damon, and you mentioned Glover, but the cast is great. I mean, basically, every part is filled by a great actor or actress.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, there's some comedy actors and actresses, like Glover, and I think isn't Kristen Wiig in it, too?
Kristen Wiig's even in the movie, yeah.
But then you also have some great dramatic actors in there. You have, you know, Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, also a comedic actor as well.
And then the guy whose name I can never say, who's the black guy who's helped working with Watney.
Oh, I don't even know.
I don't know. He's a great actor. He's been in some other great movies, too.
He has. He's one of those guys, I know his face, but I've never, I don't know his name.
I mean, yeah, it's just entertainment. And there's, like, one thing that the book does that the movie either couldn't do or would have been a lot harder to do. And I was wondering, after I read the book, how the movie would handle it. And that is the way that Earth is revealed, basically. So in the book, the first third of the book is entirely Mark Watney's perspective. And you start to wonder, are we going to see anyone else? Are we going to know what's going on? Because you think that maybe it will. It's just kind of unclear if they'll do that. And then I think at the right time, like when you're just kind of starting to say, okay, this is kind of starting to fall into a little bit of a predictable routine, it cuts to Earth, and it jumps back in time to right when the explosion happened, the disaster that landed Watney in space, and you kind of see piece by piece how they responded, and then how they figured out that he was still alive, and then how they started communicating with him, and then it cuts back and forth between those, and then later, it does the same thing where it cuts back in time to the astronaut team. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if you've gotten that far in the book yet.
Yeah, so they're actually just cut back to that part.
Okay, so it's very interesting because you see you see different things happen in different chronological... I mean, instead of just a linear chronology, you see things from different perspectives and you kind of have more appreciation for it. And so I was guessing that the movie was going to do what it ended up doing, where basically it just does it in a linear fashion. Mm-hmm. But do you think the movie might have been more interesting or more ambitious if it had tried the different chronologies where it kind of shows it an episode and then goes and shows it again from a different perspective and then from a different perspective?
I think that's a great question, especially since reading the book after watching the movie, I always know that they're going to go back to Earth. Like, I never had that moment of, okay, are they going to cut back to Earth or something like that, or are we just going to be talking about Mars here? I think the movie, I don't know if it would have been better or worse. I know that, like, when it comes to what they wound up doing, it seems like they just took a completely different approach, not even just in the linear storytelling, but almost the all-encompassing theme of, like, what they wanted to project from the movie. So with the book, yeah, I think it would have maybe come off a little bit more ambitious, like we were saying. But what I thought was kind of cool about what Ridley Scott was, it seemed like he was looking to do, was kind of telling the story about how to be a problem solver, how to maybe even approach your life, kind of a one day at a time type of mentality. You know, there's even the scene in the movie in the beginning when he's kind of when he's stranded. They talk a lot about, you know, him solving one problem at a time, and then when he gets back to Earth, sorry for the spoiler, but when he gets back, kind of starting that first day teaching is like day one all over again. Like, he has to kind of reacclimate, and this taking one day at a time is going to be the same throughout his life. I think actually the scene that brought that home was when the first potato plant started to blossom.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when he's looking down at the ground right before he walks into the classroom, he sees the one little flower.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So, I didn't make that connection.
Right, yeah. So he's experiencing this kind of overall, this is how to solve a problem, this is how to keep your head about you if you're ever in crisis, and kind of how to move through that. And I really like that. Like, that gives me a really warm and fuzzy feeling. I think it is kind of shoehorned, though, into a pure kind of an entertainment movie, like this one kind of was. But yeah, no, I don't think it would have been necessarily better. I think it just was trying to do something completely different.
Yeah.
For sure.
A couple other things I wanted to bring up. And one is actually, I'm worried to bring it up because it'll actually spoil it for you, is the difference between the movie and the book. So I'll keep it general here, but the ending of the book cuts off much more abruptly than the movie.
Really?
So the movie...
I guess I should have expected that a little bit.
The movie has more of a conclusion in terms of seeing what happens to different characters. Mm. And I remember that was actually one of my biggest complaints with the book, is that the book does such a good job of, like, of showing this effort of everyone trying to get through every little obstacle at a time, and like they're kind of working in parallel, not together. I mean, and sometimes it's together, but you have NASA trying to figure out what he's doing, and then you have him trying to figure out what he's doing, and then you have like the other astronauts who are like thinking about, I don't know, it's just, you have all these people and you get to know these characters on their own, but they kind of have parallel concerns. And so I was really hoping there would be some scene or series of scenes where you get to see more of them kind of interact and like actually like thank each other and like bond a little bit at the end, but the book ends fairly abruptly and there's none of that. And then the movie, it doesn't have a whole lot of that, like everybody kind of hugs each other at the end,
right?
But it does have some conclusion in terms of seeing where the characters end up.
Well, they almost do it like an epilogue.
Yeah.
In the movie, where it's like you get like the writing at the bottom of the screen, kind of.
Yeah, it's basically that.
You get that feeling. And also, I mean, that makes sense to me, just because I think the new complaint about movies as a medium, you know, everybody says that adults watch TV now for like those hour-long dramas on HBO or, you know, channels like that, because movies, given the fact that they need like a full arc, or it can be oftentimes much more predictable than, say, a TV show. Or a book. So, You know, it's funny, I am kind of shocked to hear that it's not exactly the same, but I feel like I should have been able to guess it now that you mention it, from that perspective. Yeah, do you think that the book, so in comparing the two, do you think the book was a better ended, or?
I think the ending in the movie was more satisfying. I was actually disappointed. I mean, it kind of makes sense within the framework of the book, I guess, because it's so much just about each survival challenge, and the characters are kind of there to make that happen.
Right.
So it might have been a little bit out of sync with what the rest of the book is to have like an emotional happily ever after type ending where we get a whole the new amount of everyone, like what are they
right.
doing now, an epilogue type thing. But you know, so it did make a little more sense in the context of the movie. So I guess the ending is one area where the book did not leave me satisfied, but the movie did. But I would say in general, because the book could really... The movie had a lot of, like, this technical detail, but the book just has so much more room to, like, really explore it and explore the problem solving. And so I just found, in general, the book to be much more satisfying because it could get into such detail, like, give you the metrics of every little thing for, like, every little problem and
right.
kind of, like, see... And work through, even if you don't really care about, you know, the specific numbers, just kind of getting a sense of the effort that he's putting in to solve these problems and seeing it go step by step. I thought it was very satisfying in the book.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that because now you're putting some things into perspective for me. Because when I first told you that we had seen the movie, and I had known that you'd read the book already, so we talked about that I had seen the movie, and I said, oh, how's the book? And you said, oh, you know, it's very episodic. You kind of gave me, like, the quick hit for it. And you didn't sound super amped on the whole thing. And that might have been because the way it ended kind of left, like, almost
yeah.
like a sour taste in your mouth at the end there.
Yeah.
Even though you may have liked the book better for the entire ride of it.
Right. So, I mean, so I use Goodreads to keep track of the books I read and give them ratings. And, like, as the book was going, I was super into it. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be... I don't give out too many 5 stars, but I was like, this has the potential to be a 5-star.
Right.
Because I was just into it as it went. And then the ending just kind of happened, and I was done, and I was like, oh, I guess the book is done now. And then I was like, well, I guess this is a 4-star book. It's not a 5-star book.
Interesting. You know? That's I can't wait to finish. I mean, of course, I couldn't wait to finish it.
I'll be curious to hear, like, do you have the same response that I did, that it was just kind of abrupt? So.
I can't wait to find out and kind of report back. And it's funny that... the way that you made the book sound to me before I started reading it, it was kind of like, you definitely should do it. It's not a waste of your time, but, like, it's not that fantastic. And that was the idea that, you didn't say that, in all fairness, but that was kind of like the idea that I got. And I've been reading it, and I've been like, this is awesome.
It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been, like, kind of head over heels for it. There's even a few emotional scenes that are kind of done differently in the movie, where I'm, like, you know, kind of fawning over them, like, when they first... discover that he's alive with the satellite pictures. I don't know why. This is one of those scenes that they didn't do. If they did it the way that it was in the book, it would have been a huge triumph, but instead it was kind of a bit flat. Was the girl...
Mindy Park or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, right, Mindy Park. She completely breaks down in the book. She can't even keep it to herself. She can't even really get the words out when she's trying to tell Kapoor that he's alive. In the movie, I was discussing this with Kara, actually. I don't know if she had any emotion at all. I don't remember anything.
She just reported it, right?
Right, and if I don't remember it, it probably wasn't anything too big. So that's the kind of thing where it's like, well, why not? And actually, that brings up one more thing, and I know that we're getting close on the time side. In terms of looking at Ridley Scott in general... I've been noticing, we kind of asked that question originally, why this movie?
Yeah.
The guy doesn't make that many movies. He's very selective on what he chooses. Why this book into this movie? Of course, is it space? Okay, he really likes space, we know that. But that's, you know, there's been a lot of space movies made that I don't think he's been trying to throw his name on. But I was thinking, it seems that almost every movie that he does, all the humans are on the same side, like what we were saying.
Oh.
About the characters.
That's interesting.
I don't know how many Ridley Scott movies you've seen.
I've seen most of the big ones.
Okay.
I don't know if I ever would have made that connection, but the ones that I'm thinking of.
It's kind of like most of the conflict to me has seemed that his movies are like
some people like against, external force.
Yeah, some kind of like a, this is the way the world works that we're fighting against. Like, you know, that Mars is a bad planet for humans to live on.
That we need to tame. Or
Or like even like a movie like Blade Runner.
Uh-huh.
It's like, well, we kill the androids. That's my job.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not so antagonistic between the characters. It's much more like us against the world, but the world is forcing us against each other type of a thing. The conflict seems to be kind of specific each time as opposed to being, you know, interpersonal.
Interesting.
I wonder how true that
holds up. So maybe that's why the story called to him. It would be interesting to go through all of his movies and see to what extent is it, like, not a villainous person, but, like, some manipulating force or some powerful force that they're fighting against.
Yeah, that they're just kind of out of control of, and they're, you know, just kind of, like, trying to figure it out or what have you. And, I was curious as to if that was kind of the feature that drove him to this book. And then, if so, is that why we don't see... Is that why there's no antagonism kind of built into the characters? And then, even furthermore, I'm very curious to even see now if you look back at a lot of Ridley Scott characters, how seemingly one-dimensional do a lot of them look because he's insistent on them being competent and kind of steely-eyed about the way that they live their lives? Because I've noticed that too, like, everybody's super competent.
Yeah,
in The Martian, there's nobody who's messing up.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, so they're, the things that make them interesting characters aren't necessarily, like, flaws, like, basic flaws.
No, it's there's like, zero flaws, really.
It's basically, like, this is a personality quirk. And that's one thing that, I mean, like, they have all these characters in the book, and that's another thing that if they had, like, merged, like, let's say they merged Mindy Park, I forget who played Mindy Park, and with Donald Glover's character, or, like, right. Just chosen a few characters who served, like, a specific role and, like, brought them together and then kind of, like, given those characters a little bit more definition, might have been a little bit more effective than just, like, all these troopers who are just kind of doing their thing.
Right, and, I mean, that's kind of, that's an interesting thing that I found about this movie. You know, people are saying, oh, it's been refreshing to watch the super competent achieve a goal. And I'm kind of like, yeah, that's absolutely great, but it's so accurate that there's so many different moving pieces. Like you said, Mindy Park and Donald Glover's character, because of their skill set, wouldn't mesh given this style. But if it was a different style, these could be a little bit more bendable characters, or we could at least combine them to kind of have more personality traits, and that might be fun to watch. And I'll just bring up this last thing. I know, you know, as I said, we're close to time. But in the book, I noticed, too, none of the characters are described by their physical appearance.
Yeah, and that's that is kind of striking. Like, you can infer some races, I guess, from the names. But
right.
They're not, you don't hear how tall or how pretty or ugly or what color hair they have.
Right.
And I'm sure that was a deliberate thing.
Right.
You almost have to, like, write around that. It's just, like, it's all about their names and their occupations.
Yeah, and the thing that actually made me realize that was there's this one scene where Mindy Park walks into someone else's office, one of the superiors' office, and it just describes her hair as messy because she hadn't slept in, like, 48 hours or something like that. It's completely dependent on the stresses that they're going through. It has nothing to do with her personality that her hair is messy.
Or the way she looks like.
Yeah, she's not commented on pretty ugly, what have you, which is, again, refreshing and nice, but definitely different. So, but we might have to do a little searching on the Ridley Scott movies and see what's going on there.
I like the unified theory of Ridley Scott, that he has competent, steely-eyed soldiers fighting against some, like, external manipulating or dangerous force.
Yeah.
We'll have to look into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, thanks. This was a fun talk.
Yeah, I had a great time. Thanks for having me.
We'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
All right, so that was our talk about The Martian, the book, and the movie.
Yep.
Adios.
Space. Go to space.